This is a Carlisle ValueCast, brought to you by the Carlisle Group. ValueCast brings you insights from our One Carlisle Network, providing analysis, data, and observations to help you navigate the global economy and top-of-mind issues in news. The Carlisle Group. Invest wisely. Create value.
Good morning. My name is Glenn Youngkin, and I'm the co-president and co-chief operating officer at Carlisle. Today, we're discussing the energy investment picture. I'm joined today by the three gentlemen who lead Carlisle's private equity funds that invest across the energy spectrum around the world. Ken Hirsch, who's the CEO and managing partner and co-founder of NGP Energy Capital Management. Ken's also a senior advisor to Carlisle and serves on our management committee. Bob Mancini, who's the managing director and co-head of Carlisle Power Partners. And Marcel Van Puca, who's a managing director and head of Carlisle International Energy Partners. Ken, Bob, and Marcel will each provide a brief overview of the main factors and trends that they're seeing as they and their teams sort through the many opportunities to invest in energy today. Then the four of us will have a panel discussion drilling down on the current environment. With that, I'll turn it over to Ken Hirsch.
Thanks, Glenn. I'm going to focus my remarks on the North American oil and gas market and let Marcel talk about the international energy market and Bob talk about the power market. The first big macro point that I'd make about investing in North American oil and gas is not to think of it as some sort of proxy for commodity prices. In fact, one of the most important aspects of the industry itself has been the tremendous resilience that it has kind of regardless of commodity prices. Much like any other industry, prices are an output, not an input. So I'll narrow it down to three major forces that are at play in the U.S., first in the U.S. natural gas market, and then second in the U.S. Oil market. On the natural gas side, the first and foremost is that we're in an unprecedented reconfiguration of North America from a declining mature asset province to a growth area. It's absolutely stunning to watch the United States go from 50 billion cubic feet a day of production in 2007 to over 70 billion cubic feet a day today, with more growth because of the unconventional shale revolution. On the oil side, going from 5 million barrels a day to 8.5 million barrels a day in the last 4 years is a stunning turnaround to what was thought that the United States was a declining province. We're into an execution phase as opposed to some sort of a land rush phase. We now know where all the oil and gas is. We know the producing areas. It's hard work. It's difficult work. It varies between plays. It varies within plays. But for those people with good local knowledge, they're able to actually grow their assets. The second force is that we're beginning another wave of big demand growth. In the United States, on the natural gas side, the demand growth has gone at the same time from about 50 billion cubic feet a day to over 70 billion cubic feet a day of demand in the last 5 years. And there's, according to our estimates, there's roughly another 20 billion cubic feet a day of demand growth coming between now and 2020, and it's real simple. About 6 BCF a day, 6 to 8 would be the export of LNG, a couple BCF a day to Mexico, 1 to 2 BCF a day to Canada, and very importantly, about 10 BCF a day of industrial demand growth, fertilizer plants, chemical plants, gas to liquids, things that are virtually all under construction today that will be turning on as a source of demand for in the next 5 years. And then the third area is a resurgence in M&A. These unconventional shale wells cost, depending upon the area, between $5 million and $15 million a copy, and it's not for the faint of heart. And so for people who need to stay within their cash flow of CapEx, they have to access third-party capital in order to really grow beyond just what their cash flows can support. And so we've seen a resurgence in the amount of portfolio optimization M&A, plus people that got overextended on land acquisition and acquired too much land for what they're able to drill, and a whole host of other reasons. But we're seeing in the first half of this year, we've already matched the entirety of last year with respect to M&A in North America. So those are the three big pushes that really define the activity, the increasing velocity of activity in the North American oil and gas space. And with that, I'll turn it back to you, Glenn.
Thanks, Ken. Marcel, why don't you give us your thoughts around the international environment, particularly Europe?
Thank you, Glenn. Yeah, also three major major issues, opportunities. One is that we see, and we've seen that accelerating in the last year, divestments from basically all major players. We see anywhere between 300 and maybe 350 billion. It's a big number of divestments. And the reason for that is that more and more capital gets reallocated to unconventional in the United States. Big opportunity, but also very capital intensive. And we see most projects, if not all international projects, the complicated projects like offshore Brazil, Kazakhstan, Australia, Mozambique, the Arctic, they're all over time and over budget. And to give you one example, for instance, and it's a good example because all the major oil companies, including Exxon and Shell, are involved, and Chevron is in Kazakhstan, a project called Kashagan, which was originally a $15 billion project. It's now $50 billion. It's 8 years over time, and it's still not producing. And that is typical. It's not because these companies don't know what they're doing. They're very qualified, but it tells you how complicated it is to find new barrels of oil and gas. We also see BG is a good example, where they are same overruns, but on top of that, geopolitical problems. And that brings me to the second topic, which is the geopolitical situation. Europe, Middle East, Africa, Russia is, of course, the complete opposite of what's happening in the United States. So it means that in areas where it was forecasted that there would come new production online, like in Iraq, like in Libya, that's not materializing because of all those problems, the geopolitical problems. And on top of that, we see the situation in Russia developing in a very serious way. I think people here in Europe get really worried about it. And that means that supply from Russia of oil and gas will be there are questions about it. And I think it will become even more important, and governments will stimulate to invest, especially in North Sea oil and gas. And then the third issue is government regulation. You would think that in this whole situation in Europe, governments would be much more open to unconventional drilling. But it's interesting, it's quite the opposite. Most governments have a ban in place for fracking. Germany is even working on a new ban on fracking. The only government in Europe who is trying to stimulate it is the UK government, but there's a lot of opposition. And that is combined with a phase-out of nuclear. That was already the case in Germany and is now also, since this year, it was announced that we will see that in France also. So regulators are governments are changing the landscape, and oil and gas is clearly a very important space to be. And for that, with that, I give it over to back to you, Glenn.
Thanks, Marcel. Bob, let me pass it over to you and just a few thoughts on the power markets.
Thanks, Glenn. Well, if those of you have seen the Wall Street Journal this morning, there's a front page article about how electric utilities are being challenged by the fact that demand for power seems to be down. And I think it's probably useful to frame that issue, because I think if you look at the U.S. power markets as a single market, what you'll find is that, generally speaking, the U.S. power market as a whole is slightly oversupplied. In other words, more power generation capacity exists than demand for electricity. But the fallacy in that assumption lies in the fact that the U.S. power market is not just one market. It's really comprised of 11 different regional markets, and in some cases, for example, in the case of New York, California, and Texas, states have their own unique market dynamics. And then in other cases, the market is comprised of multiple states. But here's the catch. In general, it's difficult, if not impossible, to move power from one market to another. And so, for example, even though New York and New Jersey share a common border and both have power plants on each other's doorsteps, with very few exceptions, power can't be transmitted across state lines. And so, as a result, despite the general oversupply in the market as a whole and in certain regions, like the region that American Electric Power, which is the subject of the article, sits in are generally oversupplied. Over the next 2 to 5 years, there are going to be shortages of power generation capacity in certain of these markets. Now, the power markets generally are going through a significant transformation, and the changes that are occurring are creating significant investment opportunities. And there are several high-level factors that are contributing to this sea change. And the first, of course, is the most obvious, is the continuation of the shale gas revolution and the growing availability of cheap gas. The second, also having made the headlines, is environmental regulations, both at the federal and state level. But then things that are not as obvious, like the continued build-out of wind and solar, is creating disruptions on certain grids, particularly in places like California, that you have to address by adding certain firming resources. So, and then finally, we've got a very robust project financing market at the moment. So to put the opportunity set into context at a high level, every year for the past 8 or 9 years, we've seen between $20 and $25 billion of assets change hands in the power markets. This year and next year, those numbers could be as high as $35 billion. So there certainly is a lot of liquidity in these markets and a lot of activity. What are the markets that we see the most disruption in, and why? Well, the biggest changes are occurring in four markets from our perspective. The first is California, Texas, or is referred to as ERCOT, PJM, which is all or part of 13 states in the Mid-Atlantic and includes Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Maryland, Virginia, and then in New England. But the reasons for opportunity in each of these markets is different. So in California, for example, with the introduction of significant amounts of particularly solar, the grid operators are being challenged in their ability to maintain stability in the grid. And so even though California is, generally speaking, in a excess supply situation at the moment, it's short of one very important type of resource, and that's a peaking capacity to firm up when the sun isn't shining or at those periods when the sun is starting to set and people are coming home and switching on their utilities. And it's being exacerbated in California by the fact that there's environmental legislation coming down the road that will eliminate, for example, the use of seawater to cool coastal gas-fired plants, and that's going to eliminate a substantial amount of supply. So over the next 2 or 3 to, say, 5 years, we're going to see a significant change in the California market. Now, Texas is a different story. Texas is more about a power shortage that's looming. And that's because demand for power is increasing so significantly, and that's driven by the shale gas revolution, creating a mini-industrialization or reindustrialization. And Texas is probably a poster child for industrial and residential growth in the U.S. So of the more than 100 new major industrial projects that are planned to be built over the next 5 or 6 years, a third of those are in Texas, and that's going to drive power demand. If you look at PJM, the story is really it's more about supply destruction than it is demand. Even though there's cheap Marcellus gas and it is causing some resurgence of industrial activity, the real story is about the destruction of supply, and that's caused mainly by, first, the coal to gas switching. That's simple economics, that coal plants find it hard to compete with gas plants at $3.50 to $4 gas. And the second, though, is the environmental regulations. And I'm not even talking about the recent EPA rules aimed at curtailing CO2 emissions. I'm talking primarily about the rules that were passed some years ago and go into effect in 2015 that are aimed at reducing mercury. And that's going to take a significant amount of the coal generation out of the stack. So, you know, New England is more about the fact that there's no gas infrastructure in New England. Those are the four markets that I think are experiencing the most disruption, and that's where we see the opportunity.
Great. Thanks, Bob.
Thank you for joining us. For more information, go to our website at www.carlyle.com. This has been a Carlyle ValueCast podcast.